This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Tyree Day grew up in a family of storytellers. The tales he heard from his mother and other memories from his youth are the basis for his first collection of poetry. River Hymns is a book full of death, but not despair. Instead, Tyree Day's poems are conversations with the dead, celebrating their lives and their lasting presence in ours. River Hymns won the American Poetry Review Honickman First Book Prize this year. Tyree Day is only the second African-American to receive that honor since the award was launched in 1998. He's going to be reading from River Hymns tomorrow evening at North Carolina State University and joins me now to tell me about the collection. Tyree, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
What got you started writing poetry?
I've always, you know, been interested in language before I knew I was interested in language. I think it's, again, it's that history of, you know, storytellers, right? And I think it's just ingrained. It's in my head. I constantly hear these stories.
There's a difference, though, isn't there, between storytelling, which is an art all by itself, and then the literary art and craft of poetry. How did you did you ever feel the distinction, and why did you choose to go the route of poetry?
Well, I always tell myself I'm too lazy to write fiction, right? And I love the conciseness of poetry, right? And for me, I don't know, poetry is just something that naturally called me. I remember in high school, my mother got me the Langston Hughes Collected, and I started reading through that, and I was writing my, you know, those high school poems, of course. But I don't know, something about it really stuck with me, and I found out you could major in it, and then...
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, but the other thing, too, I mean, stories rely heavily, or often rely heavily, on character. Mm-hmm. You create an individual, you identify with that individual, mm-hmm. and then put them in context. But poetry is so driven by imagery. Mm-hmm. That can be a character, but that concise nature of poetry makes it a fundamentally different craft, is it not?
Yeah, it's very true. Most of my poems, you know, begin with the image. I usually leap from image to memory, or, you know, or the other way around. But yeah, you're definitely right.
And palpable imagery, in your case, it is very concrete, very earthy. In fact, maybe I could ask you to read a poem for us now.
Yeah, sure.
Southern Silence?
Southern Silence, all right. Southern Silence. I've only trusted four white people in my life. My mother showed me the ropes early. I'm afraid to untie myself, get down from this branch. Even the Jesus on the wall of this church, old and swaying, has something up his sun-touched sleeves. Tell me the value of my soul, why he wants it so badly. I can't pray to someone who favors the men that called us niggers from their trucks. I touched every part of Thomas Field until I found the dirt I thought could hold me. What said nothing always grieved. I loved myself before I knew what I was made of. So many different things were ruined the blood. A bottle of gin killed three of my uncles, one granddaddy. We called it white liquor. I wanted to cage and bring home what I made of myself. Look at your proud boy, mama. I wish I only spoke in song, make a home from these trees, the way birds do.
Tyree Day, reading from his collection, River Hymns. He's going to be reading tomorrow evening at North Carolina State University, that one called Southern Silence. What was the impetus for this? What's the inspiration for this poem?
This poem, I remember, particularly started with the line, the dirt I thought could hold me. And that kind of, you know, sparked this whole just mirage of memories, right? And that's usually how my poems work, right? It starts with the image. But it just sparks the memory of, like, you know, my mother setting me down and telling me very early, right, just the history of where, you know, particularly Franklin County, right, and being raised in that. And it's, you know, again, image and memory, this... interior architecture of a poem. Yeah. Right?
And it is so concrete, and yet the way the words are framed and placed in the poem is powerful. Dirt that holds one is cemetery. One is held in dirt when you're dead. And you talk about memory, this thing that's kind of ineffable. And yet it's all about your place, too. Mm-hmm. So it's a place where your feet are sort of always on the ground. Does an image like that So I gave this kind of mordant analysis of your wonderful poem about seeing this dirt that holds and what feeling the nature of death and grave, but also of memory. Mm-hmm. Does that happen to you when that phrase, you said that was the first phrase mm-hmm. of this poem that occurred to you. Mm-hmm. Do all of those ideas begin to sprout from that, or are you just still focused on that image in that moment?
Usually for me it happens, I focus on that moment, and then as I'm trying to work through the poem, right, those images and those memories start to pop up, but then I have to go back and start rearranging them and trying to make sense of the narrative. And
this one had a deeply social, obviously, an overlay when you talk about some of the social injustice that mm-hmm. you or someone else may have experienced. Are these things that you experienced in Franklin County?
Well,
Collective experience?
Wake County also, right?
Yeah.
I've definitely been riding with family members and had someone pull up and call us that, right?
Yeah.
And then the whole religious aspect of it, right? I remember growing up and going to church, and then, you know, I still think about this now, right? This idea in black churches is this picture of a white Jesus on the wall, and we never say anything about it, but, you know, that's, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Who's this guy representing? Why am I branded this guy? Well, I'm going to talk more about that and your relationship with, we might call it the numinous, we might call it superstitious or religion. Mm-hmm. It has different valences as we go forward, but I'd like you first to read another poem for us, if you would, maybe Tamed.
All right.
All right?
Tamed. I was the unbroken horse of that town. Slept standing up, held on to the breeze like wildflowers. I kept caterpillars in jars. My mama let them go. I figured they just disappeared. There are moments when you can hear God say things, soft-spoken, the sun settling between thin ponds, collected crickets in 2-liter bottles, dropped them in a path far from the house, one or two drowning. One or two at the bottom drowning in the last swig of cola. The smell of mama's leaf pile faint and almost gone. My mama would say, to kill a cricket is a sin against the night.
The poem is Tamed. It is from the collection River Hymns, written by Tyree Day, my guest today on The State of Things. He's going to be reading tomorrow evening at North Carolina State University. A lot of your poems have to do with these kind of I'll call it supernatural ideas. To kill a cricket is a sin against the night. This mm-hmm. this has a deeper understanding of our relationship with us, the night, and crickets mm-hmm. than we might. How have you always had this kind of fascination and interest in this other world?
Definitely. I write most of my poems late at night, right? For me, that's when the cosmic, right, comes alive. I've always, and, you know, It's in my background, right? It's in, you know, my grandmother on my mother's side is from South Carolina, right? They're Gullah Geechee. So that whole tradition is still very much a part of my family and these stories and everything.
How do you weigh that? How do you perceive that in your own life? This other world that others might call superstitious, it's not real, but it is real. It mm-hmm. clearly plays an important and palpable part in the lives of your family. Is this something that you put a finger on, or this is apparently what you'd use your poetry to kind of express?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's definitely real for me, right? I have superstitions that I definitely, I'll admit this on the air, right? I'm terrified of birds, right? Because of things I've heard I grew up. So you'll see me probably run from a bird, right? But things like that. And I like what we were talking about earlier, this idea that, you know, this idea of magic and supernatural only belongs to a certain few, right? I like that it's like its own little club, right? Either you see it or you don't, yeah. Right?
There's a wonderful image, and I can't remember which poem it is. Maybe we can even pull it up. The image of the hummingbird and sort of what your mother says about this. Forgive me for not recalling the title, but it's a wonderful poem. And we might be able to talk about this more deeply with that poem. Would you read it?
Yeah. Wade through. My mama dreamed belly dancers dressed in red around above the coffin. Then her sister, a slick-haired woman, was gone. No one heard the hush fire in the kitchen. My mama grew up in a tin roof house near a field of peaches, green arrow-shaped leaves washed, then covered to suck fever out. Her mama told her, if you see a hummingbird, yellow and blue wind under a small head, someone's going to die. Someone always did. Her daddy on a small wooden bed frame is brown fading gray. Ash and dreams favor stars. My mama is afraid she'll dream me dead. When it rains, she tells me to keep my head down. It only takes a drop of water to drown you. I visit her on weekends, bring flowers she places in a vase, wings still in her ears, lilies on the table, white as a skull.
Tyree Day reading from River Hymns, and he's going to be doing that again tomorrow at North Carolina State University. That one called Wade Through. Tell me more about that poem.
Yeah, so the superstition of a hummingbird, right? That kind of started this poem, me remembering that, right? I remember I was with a friend and we actually saw a hummingbird, and I saw one. I was, of course, like instantly freaked out. But then it sparked that poem. And so the first image of this poem is a story that, you know, I remember my mother telling me, right, how she dreamed about these belly dancers around the fire. Then her yeah. sister passed away, right? So, and then it just, you know, again, it just sparked these constant memories of, you know, and me trying to, again, play with it and trying to make sense of it in my own life.
It's interesting, too, because and I think this is the gift of the poet is to allow us to see in new ways. If you think about the line itself, her mama told her, if you see a hummingbird, yellow and blue wind under a small head, someone's going to die. The image of, you know, to the rational mind, the idea of seeing a hummingbird maybe tuck its head under its wing, if that's what's going on here. So, well, if you saw that, how could that possibly be related to a death? Mm-hmm. Because they do it all the time. On the other hand, if an individual with that kind of sight mm-hmm. sees that, when they see that in that way, that's when they can foretell the death. In other words, it's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
It's their seeing. It's not the hummingbird tucking its head. It's mm-hmm. the moment of seeing that brings all that together.
Right, yeah.
And it just strikes me that this is what a poet can do that you know, other forms of writing and even other forms of literature can't do.
Mm.
You're interested, though, in hip-hop and in rap, and those are fundamental. They seem similar. How would you distinguish the two? Because you didn't choose to go that route.
I don't know. I've tried to rap in the past. I'm just told I'm bad at it, right?
Okay.
I don't know. I'm a poet. It's something, I don't know. For me, if I think about it, the things I like to express, so you think about this poem I just read, in the song, it probably wouldn't be as, right, it wouldn't mm-hmm. have the same effect. I don't know. I hear natural music in the lines already without the other.
That's the other thing that's evident in your poetry, not only the connection with those and your legacy, but also with the natural world, that mm-hmm. they're very deeply interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And almost the failure to feel that is going to allow you to hear these poems in very different ways if you're not connected in that way. So what does it do for you? I mean, if you think about your next, as you're working on, I'm assuming, are you working on your next collection of poetry now, your next poet?
I'm trying not to put the pressure on myself and like think about it as a book, right? I'm just trying to write the poems, but I'm definitely still very much interested in that in the new work. The new poems are kind of in the same lens, but they're talking like directly to my personal dead, right? And them kind of speaking back to me, and me kind of obsessed with my own immortality, and you know, like.
Right, because in these poems, it seems very much a one-way conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But now they're speaking back, so it's that, you know, I'm still continuing this same obsession.
You also teach.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I teach at Lewisburg College. It's the oldest two-year college in the country. I'm teaching comp there, really great students.
What's that like for a poet to be teaching composition?
It's actually really great for me. I know a lot of others, you know, you hear so many stories. But for me, it's great because I love this idea of going back to look at the sentence, right? And when I go back and look at the sentence and I teach them the sentence and everything you can do with a sentence, then I go and look at my own work. I'm like, ah, this is what you're doing with the sentence, and this is how you can change it, and this is how you can be even clearer.
So it does do that for you. You go back after you've had to actually explain how it works, then you go back and look at your work.
Every time.
Have you made changes, or have you seen your own poetry in a new way because of that?
Definitely, especially with the new poems. I'm a poet of the sentence, right, of the unit, of the line. But now it's clearer. I can see it almost like this little map, right, and how everything is laid out.
Yeah. I wonder if I can get you to read Dirt Cakes for us.
Yeah. Dirt Cakes is the first poem of the book. Is also my favorite poem. Dirt Cakes. My grandmother's body lives under an ash tree on an old church ground. Her spirit can be seen making a maple tree's shadow jealous. The church's bricks absorb the choir's songs. They flake Holy Ghost if trouble don't come today. I visit, fall on my knees, ask her how she doing, how long is her hair now, does she still like it braided in front, still like having her scalp scratched, what y'all doing in heaven today. She tell my mama, don't let a bird get the hair that falls out your head, they'll use it to build a nest and you'll never leave Roseville. Dirt is the only thing I know that can't die. It makes sense we would bury here. Makes sense mama don't want me playing in it.
Dirt Cakes from the collection River Hymns. The author, Tyree Day, is going to be reading at North Carolina State tomorrow night. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is great.
Tyree Day is author of River Hymns, the winner of this year's American Poetry Review Honickman First Book Award. You can find out more about his work at our website, stateofthings.org, or visit him tomorrow evening at North Carolina State. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasia.